Okay, if everybody can take their seats, please. And we'll start here tonight with a 3M. And we're fortunate to have George Buckley here to talk about how things are really not so off track. He's had an interesting time for his tenure, where things came on so strong this spring. And then he had a bit of a perfect storm. But the radar is all back on place, back on course. And we definitely believe that 3M is well on track to be able to take and put in a lot of initiatives to lift their long-term secular organic growth rate and at the same time certainly maintain their well above average returns on capital and profitability.
Thank you, Nick. Well, as far as the theme of the conference, I'm going to talk obviously about customer engagement, but I'm also going to talk about my real heartfelt passion, which is the issue of growth, and tell you a little bit more about how we propose to go about doing those sorts of things, and then by all means let's have a good Q&A session at the end. There's your Miranda warning, just passed very quickly. But the sort of things we're going to talk about today, we're going to look at the historical performance very briefly, just take stock of where we were and how we've done in the recent past. Then talk about our growth strategy and how we engage with our customers. To remind the audience that our commitment to operational excellence remains absolutely solidly in place. It's an absolute vital platform from which to drive growth. You cannot have a company that drives growth yet at the same time is indisciplined from an operations standpoint. And then I'll give you a quick summary about how all of these ideas come together. Here's what we've done over the past few years. See up in the top left-hand corner, our local currency growth. The CAGR has been a little bit above GDP, about 1.5 times GDP or IPI. And in the bottom left-hand corner, our EPS CAGR over the past 4 years has been 18%. Up in the top right-hand corner here, our margin growth has been almost 700 basis points, and our return on invested capital, our growth has been 680 basis points. So pretty good set of historical numbers from which to build. And if we take a look at what's happened in the first half of 06, our local currency growth has actually accelerated. And so we have been working very hard to try to drive growth. And like all companies, we have some things which help us and some things which hinder us. But at least at this juncture, we've had some pretty good results so far. In the operating margin, about flat with last year. And of course, the challenge always is when you're trying to drive growth, there are always going to be investments that you have to make. And the transition is always the thing which is the most delicate thing that you have to find a way to balance, and we have that issue as well as everybody else. In the EPS number, 222 for the first half compared with 203 for last year, so still had decent growth despite some turbulence in the optical films market. And pretty much flat return on invested capital. So things seem to be in reasonable shape in the first half of the year. Productivity, I think everybody knows 3M's devotion to Six Sigma. My predecessor was a great proponent of this, and he was the guy, to his great credit, that drove most of this. And I've tried to make sure that it's been maintained, that it's been not only maintained, but in some senses, through the adoption of lean processes, which we actually didn't do a great deal of, has been enhanced. And we actually have almost the entire staff of 3M has been trained in Six Sigma, so it's very much embedded in the company. Another area of focus, and Pat has been primarily behind driving this over the past few years, is in our overhead costs. And essentially, what we've done in real dollar terms have kept our overhead costs pretty much flat, and we've been able to get 210 basis points of margin out of doing that. And again, you'll see a little bit later, this is very much of a hallmark of where we go, trying to hold this down, making sure that we don't allow any fixed costs to creep back into this particular category. And there's more yet to be had in this particular area, which we'll show you a little bit later. Sales per employee have gone up about 50%. since 2001 from $212,000 to $304,000. So again, pretty good progress in that. No reason to believe that that won't continue. These initiatives, the sort of things that we've really had ongoing for quite a number of years, have contributed over $400 million of earnings per year to 3M's bottom line. The other thing that we've been working at is trying to drive together, reduce the variability, shall we say, of our margin spread across our reporting units. And you can see back here in 2001, we were about 16 billion sales in those days, and 62% of our operating units had margins above the average, 38% had operating margins below the average. And you can see now what we've done is we've narrowed the spread to 70% of our units now are better than the corporate average, and 30% are still less than the corporate average. But great movement between these two areas. Picking up the theme now of Nick's conference here, how do we go about embracing our customers? I mean, fundamentally, you know, most of you know 3M. It's a company being around for over 100 years. You know the mantra of the company. The mantra of the company is innovation. And fundamentally, the way that we go about doing this is reaching forward into the marketplaces, looking at the challenges and problems that our customers have, and finding ways to deliver innovative yet at the same time practical solutions on a very broad base of technology right across many, many markets. This is really our value proposition. Here's another slide that shows you the way that we think. If you think about this chart, it's sort of price versus value, and you think about a sort of 45 degree angle here where price on this line and value match. Here's the way typically we position ourselves. We position our secondary brands at about the same or maybe marginally ahead in price than our competition. We believe that also gives us some, from a perceived value standpoint, this incremental difference between these two positions gives us, we're delivering to our customers better value than we're charging price. We think that this is what our, on balance, this is on average what our competition does. And we reserve our primary brands to sort of leapfrog this position. So we always have something in reserve with our primary brands, which are sort of loaded with technology. This is kind of the way we think about how we position our brands and how we position price in the marketplace. How we bring value to the customers is really on these sort of three dimensions. Obviously engaging, I mentioned this earlier, engaging with our customers and enhancing their competitiveness. Finding ways to help them make more money, because in the end the value proposition of our products is fine, but something which is absolutely vital is obviously that we don't just meet the needs of the end consumer, but we meet the financial needs of the intermediate distribution. And then lastly, leveraging these power brands that we have, the Post-it brands, the 3M brands and other brands, Scotch brands that we have, that are legendary brands in the marketplace. But it's essentially us putting ourselves in the minds and the positions of the customers and trying to think about the solution from their standpoint and trying, in a sense, to use our company, our capabilities to solve their problems. Here's how we communicate with customers, and I'm not going to go through every single piece of this diagram, but let me just say that there's an abiding presence of 3M in the marketplace. Whether it's with the end customers, whether it's with the intermediate distributors, as they are in some cases, or whether it's with the very large accounts that we serve, in particular in the mass merchant area, just enormous amounts of employees dedicated to engaging with the consumer and the customer. This is a sort of classic diagram that 3M shows. And you know, many people will ask myself, I'll ask Pat, and I'll ask Matt, okay, well, tell us what it is that really makes sort of 3M tick. What is it that's really unique about you guys? And this is sort of one of the great things that 3M does. You know, as a person coming from the outside, who's an engineer and has worked in product development and manufacturing essentially all of my life, it's an absolute marvel to see what 3M does. But this is basically how we go about it. And what I've actually done is I've just chosen nine here of our almost 40 different technology platforms. And the way we think about it is this. We look at individual marketplaces, and obviously this is only a relatively limited list of the ones available, and we'll take a product, say like adhesives, and we'll look for applications in every single one of these marketplaces. And in the case of adhesives, we're actually quite successful. In abrasives, we'll actually do exactly the same. You'll note I did not put abrasives against graphic arts. And we do the same with ceramics, and we do the same with every other thing that we have. And we build this incredibly tight and strong interlocking network that means if any one of these markets or any one of these technology platforms suffers a little bit of a downturn, the fundamental strength of the company is maintained. And by the way, and I actually drew this particular diagram, there are actually 36, 37, or 38 platforms down this left-hand side. You would not have been able to understand this diagram had I been able to draw it and get it all on the same page. So an incredible interlocking technology network that we use to solve problems for our customers. Here's a few examples how we reach out to the customers and use our technology and our capabilities to solve their kind of problems. Here's an orthodontic product, and the application is very, very rapid. It solves many of the problems that the dentists face, and essentially requires about 25% less chairside time for a dentist than the competition. So again, we create, you know, in the end, a dentist is selling bums on seats, and what we allow him to do is to put more of them on his seats. Here's an application. This is actually a cross-section of an overhead power line. You've seen the things that sort of string from transmission tower to transmission tower. And this particular product ordinarily has a steel core. But what 3M has done here is it's used its technology to weave long-strand ceramic fibers that are used to support this core, and of course they're very temperature resistant. And the beauty of this is it allows the operating temperature of this conductor to go up about 250%, and it means that a utility in using this cable over a conventional cable can put something around 200% of the power down a cable as against the conventional design. Now you say, okay, well, so that's a big deal. But if you've ever worked in the utility industry and you face the environmental opposition that they have in trying to get new rights of way, and especially in areas of dense population, or river crossings, or places, you know, where transmission towers are seen as a real eyesore, this is a real wonderful addition, frankly speaking, to our technology pool. This right now is somewhat more expensive than the product that we attempt to replace, and without me quoting the exact numbers, we've seen something like 25% reduction in the manufacturing costs of this just in the last year. And so we're reaching toward somewhere close over the next year to two to be within striking distance of the manufactured cost of the product that it replaces. And it's my opinion that if we're successful in doing that, there's just great upside, not only for us, but of course for the customer that we serve. Probably can't see this very well right now, but this is one of our signs that what they do is basically they reflect 100% of the light that impinges on them from your headlights. So what it allows a municipality to do is put enhanced road safety without the need for local lighting. So again, we're bringing value not only to our company, our shareholders, but to the customers that we serve. This is a market that we've increasingly begun to do quite well in the security area. And obviously post 9/11, more and more attention to security, and we have got some wonderful sort of secure floating image technologies and RFID technologies that will imprint your data, but which, by the way, are not readable from the outside. So again, to bring value to the user. Three other examples here. One that we're very well known for is our optical films. And what these optical films do is they bring a much brighter screen and image to your home or to your office, yet at the same time reducing power consumption by potentially 25 or 33% in that particular case. So great product, great interest from the EPA, by the way, because of the energy savings that that this brings. An example of how you go about transforming a relatively simple product. This is painter's blue tape. This is a product that truly brings, and I know I've suffered this myself by, before I came to 3M, buying some of the old junky sort of off-brand beige tape and putting it on some wood paneling, and then when I pull it off, I pulled off the varnish with it. I know. So in the end, I saved $1 on the roll of tape, and it cost me $500 to fix it. So I know all about this particular product. So this is a product that brings real value to the user, but yet at the same time to the retailer that sells this and the distributor will bring much higher margins than the competition's products. And again, in the guise of 3M, completely on the sort of, and now for something completely different phrase, this is now in the medical field, this is a noise-canceling headphones. So what that clearly allows a physician to do is listen to your heartbeat, to listen to your heart, and it amplifies the sound by about 18x, this is the signal-to-noise ratio, and allows this physician to discriminate much better what he hears inside your body, and therefore is able to make better diagnoses. And so again, an example of bringing improved quality to a product that brings improved quality of service to the market that we're servicing. Here's another wonderful strength of 3M. It's the way that we... let me just see if I think I lost something there. Sorry, clicked one too many times. This is a magnificent strength of 3M, and I think that this global network, and you can see, I can tell you, that the black dots are where we've got sales and marketing. The little blue diamonds are where we have manufacturing and converting, and the green squares are where we have labs and technical development. So just an absolutely magnificent global network that allows us to leverage the technologies that we develop and just push this stuff out into this global market. This is really one of the four or five really incredible strengths of 3M. Here's an example of how we support one of our major customers. This is LG Philips. We have a long-term partnership with these guys, and we basically engage with them, finding out where their business is going, keep alongside them step by step. In this particular case, they've announced investments in Poland, and we have announced simultaneous investments in Poland because we want to be with them, we want to support them, we clearly want to capitalize on the growth. And in other ways, what we do is we work with them. In a technical partnership, we sit side by side. We have resident engineers in their sites. We have quarterly lab-to-lab meetings, working on issues with current product and working on new products with them. So it's a wonderful partnership, locked hands partnership that we have with LG. And we try to make sure that we do this from a seamless perspective. We don't make LG suffer the tortures of dealing with an organization that has different heads in different nations. We make sure that we have dedicated technical and business teams that support this customer wherever they go across the world. So, obviously, lots of ways that we reach out and engage with our customers. But I will bring you back now to the issue of growth, because from our perspective, clearly we need customers to drive volume, but our number one mission is to drive shareholder value, and we believe that the best way to do that is to grow. From my perspective, the first thing that a person like me tries to do is it's okay sort of beating the drum of growth, but you have to try to create a growth, an environment where that can that can happen. If you're a gardener, the first thing you've got to do is prepare the ground. You've got to pull up the weeds. You've got to get the conditions ripe for planting a new garden. In my case, ripe for planting new growth. And this is how we go about doing it. In our case, you wouldn't expect anything else, would you? It's product innovation. It's what we're known for. It's our mantra. It's our past and it's our future. And you have to have a guy like me that tries to create an environment where people can be creative. So there has to be a certain amount of flexibility. There has to be a certain amount of freedom which is granted to the technical community, because at least at the invention end of this, what many people overlook is that invention is by its very nature is a sort of a random and somewhat disorganized process. You have to allow enough creativity, enough elbow room for the community, the technical community, to be able to do that. You've got to look at the product through the customer's eyes. You've got to do the standard voice of customer stuff, which is important because they need to tell you something. But I'm always minded of Henry Ford's comment, where Henry Ford said, you know, if I'd only listened to my customers when I was working on cars, what they would have told me is, I need a faster horse that eats less hay. There needs to be something else, and I call this mixing in the magic. It's the thing that separates the average product from the truly great product. Because if you imagine that innovation can only come from a process, and if it's a process, everybody can learn it, and if everybody can learn it, the best you can hope for is to be average. So it needs something more, above and beyond. So the process is a, shall we call it a necessary, but it's not a sufficient condition for innovation to work in a corporation, especially one like 3M. But yet at the same time, while you have something which is at least a creative process, you still need to layer that into a highly disciplined process as well, in particular the manufacturing processes and the product development processes. And we've added now lean methods to our Six Sigma mix. We think it's a very complementary tool to our kit bag, and something that which is showing great promise, frankly speaking, in 3M. And this is something that, that I'm very familiar with over the years, and we think will add a great deal of positives to our mix. You know, we have challenges. We have some IT legacy issues we have to wrestle with. We've got some work to do on systemic supply chain improvements. But it's absolutely vital that you maintain front and central in your mind, as a complement to product innovation, you must have great operational excellence. Excuse me. You get it, Matt, please? I don't have a thumb wheel on here. Thank you. And then you've got to use this platform, these tools, shall we say, to drive these things. Market expansion, white space filling. And a lot of people ask me, why white space filling? You know, if you have two primary competitors, say, for example, in our abrasives area, our competition can, generally speaking, in that particular business, supply all of the needs of the customers. We've got some product holes. And so if you're our end customer, he's got to deal with two people if he wants to buy from 3M. We want to take away that kind of impediment. So it's vital that we fill in some product white spaces. Obviously, geographic expansion, I showed you that chart earlier, is vital to us. And this thing that's made 3M great over the years, adjacencies, we're a natural adjacency machine in our company. It's what we do very, very well, Stokeys, and using this as a platform to drive these things. And it's this combination of factors that will, I'll pronounce it the British way if it's okay with you, that will buoy profitable growth, buoy profitable growth. You need these things, all of them, and they need to be done properly in order to produce this kind of impact. And this sort of stuff here, over here, is about products. This stuff over here is primarily about customers, and this stuff is primarily internal and about efficiency. So where do you begin? Well, some of you, because I recognize some of the faces in the audience, you know my belief here that the best place for a company to start is to start in the places that it's already good and see how it can leverage that. So you start in the current core. I'm not going to go down, I don't think we have time, and you wouldn't have the patience necessary to let me go through all of these, but start in the current core. This is classically how 3M has played. If I look at this triangle up here, played in the top end of the market, has kind of vacated or left alone much of that part of the market. But we can, if we do it thoughtfully, we can actually in some cases extend the core. And it's important in some cases to extend the core, working from the top down a little bit, because that's what brings value to our customers, it's what brings engagement to our customers, and it's what makes us important to our customers. So we have to thoughtfully deal with this issue, and it's a great growth platform for us if we do it well. Another thing that some companies forget, you know, one of the greatest impediments to a company's future is its current success. And if you don't plan to cannibalize your product line, then I can absolutely guarantee you that your competition is going to. So even though you're trying to build the core and you're trying to find ways logically to extend it, you've got always to keep the other eye on the future and make sure that you're developing replacements for this core set of products that we spoke about here. And then lastly, to see where you can expand the base. And it's about how you go about thinking about your business. You know, if we pick on our optical films business, are we an optical films business or are we an optics business? And there are things here that you can do about defining that core and using it to expand your company. So this is the one we just went through, growing the current core. But then there are, of course, other things we've got to do. We've got to do some complementary acquisitions. We've got to build new businesses, partly through EBOs and partly through adjacencies, and this wonderful opportunity that 3M has for international growth. And, you know, I often get questioned about acquisitions. Well, do you really want to do acquisitions? I need them to help sometimes build scale, bring technology, sometimes bring market access to the core that we don't have. Sometimes I need them to help me build some kind of critical mass to be able to launch my EBOs and adjacencies. And, of course, in some cases, because of market access, I need them to help me with international growth. So all of these things are important in lockstep with one another. Now, a lot of people, you know, would probably traditionally think of 3M as only perhaps concentrating in this issue, technology innovation. That's actually wrong. If you're and this is a sort of thesis that I've long held essentially all of my working life, manufacturing companies in particular compete on these six competitive platforms. Cost, I always think that's the ultimate competitive deadly weapon. You know, in a real sort of competitive fist fight, cost is the thing. If I can only choose one of these, give me cost. Technology and innovation is something we're very well known for. Cost obviously has been driven by much of the operational excellence that we spoke about. But you need great distribution. And you need great customer service. You need to really engage and think about this issue from your customers. Marketing and brand management. You know, if you don't have great brands that people will buy and the implicit bond of trust that they have between a brand and the brand promise and the purchasing, then you're going to struggle. And of course, last and certainly not least is people, because all of our competition can do all of these things. But the people are vital because, you know, the thing that separates the sort of the best from the rest are the people you hire and how you lead and motivate them and the environment that you create for them. Here's examples of how we've used differentiated brands to grow our market and engage with our customers. We're relatively experienced at this, and of course I've conveniently divided the market into these three segments, but we're relatively experienced at how to deal with this. And in the consumer and office business, here's the core, sort of classic Post-it and Scotch brands. Here's our secondary brand that we use in the middle of the market, and we also make private label tape for a number of customers. This is vital because this is where new entrants come. A lot of people, you know, can be afraid of this sort of stuff, but let me tell you, this is where competition enters. And if you want to bulwark yourself against competition, if you want to bulwark yourself against invasion, the best place to defeat these people is on the beaches. But it is key that you thoughtfully discriminate and separate between the top of the market and the middle of the market, because if you offer something in this market which has similar features and value proposition to up here, it doesn't take long for the customers to figure it out. So it's got to be very, very thoughtfully and carefully done, and we're very, very careful. We really are extraordinarily careful about how we manage this separation in these segments in the brand. Consumer here is one example, but we also do it in other places. Our respirators, face masks, some people might call them, we have a dual brand strategy here again to pick up the middle market and the top of the market. And interestingly enough, where traditionally 3M starts at the top and has occasionally moved down, this is a place where we start at the bottom and moved up. So we have this same sort of philosophy in our traffic sign business as we do in these other businesses. And so here's where we can bring value, and here's where, from a growth perspective, we think that we can go. This is the traditional place where 3M has played, at the top of the pyramid, and we think that over the coming few years, we can drive toward the end of this 8% growth band at something like 40% leverage. We will, over time, in more segments, grow this secondary market for ourselves. In the way that we've calculated our, done our planning, we think something like 2 to 4% additional growth. But instead of at 40% leverage, we'll do this at peer margins. They may not be as good a margin as these up here, but they will not be poor margins. And of course, in the vertical direction, we'll expand through EBOs and acquisitions. And we have no intention of participating in this this down and dirty, really low price, low added value segment. It's not who we are. In the near term, here's what we're looking at for growth. We've shown this this slide a few times before. Our individual business units down the left-hand side here, INTB, the healthcare business, and these numbers are quoted excluding the pharmaceuticals business, which we're in the process of selling. Display and graphics, consumer and office, and so on and so forth. And their target, INTB, in the range 5 to 8. Over the last four quarters, they've achieved 4.1, so they're a little bit behind the pace. But doing the necessary things to accelerate here. Healthcare has been right in the middle of their target range. D&G have been a little bit above it. Consumer and office at the lower end. Safety and security actually beating their organic local currency growth targets. Electronic communications also actually right at the top end of the range. So blended 5 to 8, and this is where we've been achieving somewhere around 6%. So no real weak segments and fairly strong contributions right across our portfolio. I'd shown in the earlier diagram what our people internally call the rake diagram, the sort of four-tine diagram. I showed some M&A activity. And we've made some changes in the way that we think about M&A. One that we've been really disciplined on is that it must fit tightly into a defined strategic plan. It cannot be a purely opportunistic acquisition. It's got to be very focused and very consistent with the strategic plan. Broadly speaking, it's going to be products and channels that are familiar to us. So things that we're very comfortable with from a strategy standpoint. And from an economic perspective, obviously, even if they're margin dilutive, because of the increased growth, that they will be shareholder value creation positive. You know, I've got Scottish genes flowing through my veins, and so, sorry, price is always going to be a factor with me. I'm cheap, and that's just the way I am. Our thesis is that these acquisitions will be EPS accretive or neutral in the first year, excluding purchase accounting. And the majority of our acquisitions will be EP accretive by the end of the third year. We have stepped up our M&A activity, and here's, without going over every one of these, here's a selection of products that we've added to our portfolio in the past year. And when you annualize the sales, we get somewhere around 350 to 400 million a full year, and we spend somewhere in the range for $500 to $600 million. So a little more than 1x sales to help drive growth. Another thing which we've begun doing are these EBOs. It's a sort of a phrase that was coined by IBM some years ago, Emerging Business Opportunities. Where we've begun to work here right now is down in these areas, filtration. QNO was the first piece of that. Track and trace, you've seen us do a recent acquisition, a security-based acquisition on track and trace. We're doing some internal reorganizations and refocusing on energy and minerals, and food safety is the other one that we're working on right now. Essentially, what we've done is we've collected together scattered resources that sometimes kind of grew up in different pockets around the company. bring them together, focus them on a particular market, put them in a place where they can be looked after, reports directly to an EVP, and set them top targets and get them off and let them get growing. It seems to be working okay at this early juncture. International growth, we've spoken about this before. This has been a fabulous opportunity for 3M. Right now, international growth rates, depends on which country you're speaking about, can be 2x, even 5x what the growth rates are in the United States. Today, 3M sales are 61% outside the United States. So hugely global, and that's why that network that I showed you earlier is so vital for our future. We estimate that this will be, and I think this is conservative, will be 70% of our sales will be outside the United States in 2011. So we think we're really well positioned, perhaps better than many of our peers, to respond to international growth. And we have the infrastructure, distribution capability to take advantage of it in a way that many of our peers and competitors don't. China, I mean, the numbers bounce around a little bit, but typically bounces around anywhere between 25 and 45% CAGR growth on a month-by-month basis. We expect about $1 billion of sales by the end of 2006 in Greater China. India is growing in this kind of range, actually sometimes above that. So we've got another tiger growing here behind China. And we've begun to make our first investments and plant constructions even in Russia, where we expect similar developments and accelerated growth to happen. So great focus internationally. And what we're also doing is where we need access to a market and it's not really all that good, we'll buy some secondary brands, position our 3M brands, our classic Gold Star brands, Diamond brands right at the top, and use those secondary brands to gain access to those markets where necessary. So I think I've got four slides left, kind of bringing it all together. Just to sort of remind that folks that, yes, of course, we're going to drive organic growth. But you're going to see things coming out of 3M where they don't fit very well. You're going to see things coming into 3M where we need them. And, of course, we're very mindful that we have to have the right capital strategy to support these three initiatives. So it isn't just a drive innovation to drive growth. It's a much more thoughtful strategy that takes things out that we think are not core, adds some things that we need to bolster the core, and looks at our capital structure as a complement. Here's, we've tested, you know, what does this sort of model look like to see whether we can, in fact, do it in such a way that we don't end up with challenging margins, say, for example. And what we did here is we made some assumptions. This is actually a chart that Pat showed at a couple of previous meetings. We assumed that traditional local currency growth in our core business was 6.5% with incremental margins of 40. In the secondary markets that we had 0% growth in 06, 1.5 in 07, you can see the thing at the bottom. And when we plug all those numbers into the pot, it looks like we can drive operating income without necessarily significantly impacting margins. And this is where we think that we can go this was actually a delta when I inserted it. I've got a telephone there now by the look of it. We had driven out, I showed you this slide earlier, 210 basis points of margin between 01 and 05. We think that in the coming planning period, there's at least another percent of margin that we can get out of our overhead costs just by standing firm on the overall spend. So trying to find proper ways to balance it, just reminding people, investments in our traditional core markets at these kind of rates, intelligently and thoughtfully pursuing additional growth elsewhere in our pyramid, in markets that we can reasonably reach without negatively impacting our company, thoughtfully and carefully adding M&A that complements the core and occasionally leaves a little bridge for us to go out into some adjacencies, and we have increased recently our share repurchase authorization. And Our basic philosophy here is that we will always use at the very least an anti-dilution strategy. But over and above that, as cash allows, an opportunity presents itself to carefully examine the merits of share repurchase. Summarizing it all, drill into the core, try to make sure that in smaller markets we drive higher relative shares so we get local market power, heavy up on globalization, reminding people that technology is part of who we are. Here's the lawyer statement: careful trade-off of share and growth to maintain value creation momentum, and making sure that we strengthen our brands and our technology. And here's where we think this is going to end up longer term. We think we can get in our core local currency growth, organic, you know, sometimes somewhere around 2x IPI, and leveraging that into around somewhere in this band, 12 to 15% earnings growth, and always making sure that our investment returns are above the 20% line. So this is what we're up to. This is what we've been doing, seems to be working mostly okay so far. So thank you very much for listening. Appreciate your time, and happy to take any questions you might have. Yes, sir. First of all, I don't think we took our eye off the ball on the other business, but there's no question we devoted a lot of resources from inside the D&G business to get that manufacturing issue to rest. I had an update on this yesterday. Without me quoting specific yields, they are significantly improved over where they were. It looks like we've got the rabbit on the run now. There's probably going to be about another, I'm hoping it's going to be only a few more months' work to finish off all of those issues, and then that manufacturing process should be nice and stable. So it appears that we have that particular thing on the run now. I mean, I want to stress to people, we're a manufacturer. You're in the money manufacturing business. I suppose we are too. If you can understand what this particular manufacturing process is. It is in that particular product, it's stacking nearly 1,000 optically perfect sheets of film on top of one another, bonding them, putting them on sometimes a screen not far off the size of this, with zero imperfections, and doing it when you're making it by the mile. And by the way, these 1,000 layers of films may be a few thousandths of an inch thick when you stack them together. It is precision manufacturing right at the outer edge. Pardon me? Yes, sir. I'm trying to get you to understand this is not like shaping a piece of wood. It's a pretty challenging manufacturing technology, which, by the way, is the reason other people can't copy it, or it's so difficult for them to copy it. So I think you'd be happy with what I saw. Thank you, sir. Yes, ma'am. Yes.
I have a number of questions.
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. So, what if Yeah. The name and all that?
Specifically, no. When you're dealing with a bunch of technical people, these are people, I don't know what we have, 60% of the people that work in our technical organization have PhDs. They are a highly charged group of people, and can occasionally be a little awkward to deal with. And I think that during the last 5 years, when we focused relentlessly on process, some of them ended up feeling a little set aside, a little undervalued. And it's one of the reasons why I stress that, especially in the invention piece of what a company like 3M does, you cannot just put in handle turning process. And so there was a lot of frustration with that. So I spent an absolutely incredible amount of time engaging with these people to put a new battery, shall we say, back in the Energizer bunny there. And it seems to work very, very well. Now, I was blessed because I'm an engineer. I have a PhD. I worked in research labs. I've published lots of papers. I have a bunch of patents. So I have the entry key to the door that perhaps some other people don't have. And so I've gone there and I've stressed. I've engaged with them hours, days, weeks to reassure them that, look, this is where we're going. We need to readdress some of the things that we should have invested a little bit more money in, and reassure them that technology remains the absolute vital heart of 3M. In terms of the IT systems, we haven't attacked that yet. We've done some pieces of it. We've done some central pieces of it. We've done some the people end. We've done some ledger pieces of this puzzle. But still, fundamentally, we have systems which are somewhat antiquated compared to what we could get. So at some stage, we're going to have to wrestle with that particular issue. Now, I've forgotten your last question. White space. I'm trying not to mention any competitors' names, but in some cases, they have more capability than we do. And because we focus purely on driving margin in a smaller segment of the marketplace, in some cases, there our competition overtook us and was able to offer more to the competition. And we can't allow that to happen. If we're going to be in front of our customers and trying to sell our customers on our ideas, we have to have at least the same breadth of choice as our competition. And so that's what I mean by filling in the white space, and without trapping me into to mention specific products or specific areas. It's probably better than that, because I don't want to arm competition with any information if I can. Thank you, ma'am. Yes, sir. Understand. The INTB business was really mostly driven by the automotive pieces of that puzzle. The automotive piece there is a relatively large piece, and that saw some shrinkage as was perhaps expected, a reflection of the marketplace. So that's really what dragged them back a little bit. It's primarily in the automotive area. Was there any other air, Pat? Oh, personal care. I forgot about that. Thank you, Pat. We had moved the personal care division. This is the division that makes diaper tapes. It had been formerly in healthcare, and we moved it into the industrial business, saying, look, the manufacturing and development process is much closer aligned to an industrial business than it is a healthcare business. And so they've been the two big anchor drags on that business. The great news in the personal care business is that the decline in that business seems to have been halted. Customer relationships, just a lady called Deborah Rechtenwald is doing just an absolutely fabulous job in that business and really turning around, really, really excited about that. And so they've been the primary impediments in that business. But the balance of the business has been in pretty decent shape. It's been performing pretty well. In the consumer and office, the consumer and office business is predominantly a US-based business. And so in many respects, is one that you might expect to track something like it, you know, about GDP. In fact, it's been growing higher than GDP. And I will tell you, certainly if you look back at the last couple of quarters results and what we see with the innovation that these people are driving, some wonderful stuff coming out, I'm actually quite optimistic that that will accelerate somewhat. The real trick there is how can we replicate what we've done so well in the United States outside in other external markets. That's the trick we have to pull off now with that business. Yes, ma'am. It means features. What it means is features and value. It does not mean quality. But for example, you know, we make some of these secondary branded products out of different materials, but they always are above the value proposition that the customer expects. But as I mentioned earlier, it's important to make sure these are differentiated, because if you don't, you're going to drag the top premium products down into the middle, or even the middle down into the bottom. So we're very, very careful about the way we apply technology to each one of those. The tape backings may be different. The adhesive qualities may be different. They may be slightly thinner. There are some features that will be added to that product which differentiate it visibly, both visually and performance from other products. I think we're actually quite good at that, to be honest with you. Yes, sir. Sure. If you didn't hear, the question was, in places where we struggled, we gained some growth, where we might have missed, where that all stands. There were a number of our core businesses that perhaps, who knows all of the reasons why. I wasn't there, so what can I say about it? But where we're currently out of capacity. And so we were a little bit late to the party with some of our investments. And by the way, it's not just in some cases where we have demand that we can't respond to, because these plants are running 7 days a week, literally 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. In one case, there was a really challenging a contractual condition in one of these businesses that required us, no matter where we got the product from, to have an uninterruptible supply of product to this particular customer, or these customers, a group of them. And so we were shipping this stuff. It was actually roofing granules, you know, basically shipping rock, and you're shipping rock maybe 1,000 miles from another quarry. And so we took heavy cost penalties as a consequence of that missing capacity that actually diluted our margins in that particular business. In fact, it's actually one of the things that the industrial business suffers with, safety business suffers with a little bit. So what we've done is we've had a really concerted effort to focus on those areas where we're out of growth, and we try to think very thoughtfully about where the demand is. So we put the plant in the right place. We don't just sort of have some knee-jerk reaction to the issue. And I think that the pig has been swallowed, and it's sort of passing down the python now. Probably will take another 18 months to fully pass down the python. But increasingly we'll see some of that stuff coming out at the other end and providing new capacity so we can respond to the demand. So it's probably going to take another 18 months, I think, before all of that gets put behind us. And of course, one of the challenges that somebody like us faces is there's often expense up front associated with that. And you don't get the growth. It's very frustrating. You don't get the growth that you need, but again, some delicacy in the transition, but I think most of this will pass in the next 18 months. So I'm pretty, again, encouraged. Yes, sir. Did you mean on broad scale? You know, net, we are about break even on pricing, or maybe suffer a little bit of negative pricing. Now, remember, that's dominated by the optical film business. So obviously, in some other businesses, we benefit from some positive price, and in obviously in the electronic oriented businesses, we don't. We actually get negative price. Net, we're down about a point, I think, typically, Pat, break even, down a point somewhere, blended. There are some areas, you know, we've even had investors recommend this to us. For example, in our respirator masks. Well, look, George, if you're out of capacity and the entire world is out of capacity, why not increase prices? I was very sensitive to that. Because I think this would be then, it could become an absolutely a major PR faux pas. You know, that we're gouging the public when there's health worries. We didn't want to go down that pathway. We were doing just fine. We got decent margins, wonderful business. Why poison it with some attempts to gouge? So in some cases like that one, we took a deliberate decision not to jam prices and control volume through price, because we thought it was a more thoughtful, ethical stance to take for the corporation. But you know, in some places we're still getting price. No, I think if I look at, I don't expect to see the pricing environment change dramatically, net. But what I do expect to see a little bit of relief on, you know, during the early parts of this year, like many companies like us, you know, we got hammered with the commodity prices. It could have been fuel prices, it could have been natural gas prices, gold, silver, copper. There were some very challenging, and even some key chemicals. I won't name names, but one of our suppliers tried a 300% price increase on us, for example. And when they were the sole supplier, it was a challenging environment for a while, let's just say. So we've had those things that we've suffered with, and I think, you know, many other companies have had the same kind of issues. But that appears to be easing now. I'm much relieved that the transportation surcharges, the fuel surcharges, the natural gas, the upward pressure on chemical prices, and some commodity prices seems to be easing. So I think we should see a little bit more relief going forward. Thank you. I think that, well, we've got a sense of urgency right across our company, I can absolutely assure you. But we're not just going to buy acquisitions for the sake of building growth. Absolutely not. We will not do that. But we have begun to staff up. We've put the infrastructure in place to assess both strategically and economically acquisitions. We imagine we'll end up doing about 20 this year, and I think that's probably a similar number. Most of them are going to be smaller, tuck-ins, close to the core. Here and there, perhaps on a relatively rare basis, we'll see some bigger ones that might help transform a particular segment. All set, Nick? Okay. Thanks, everybody. Appreciate your help. Thank you.